I'm Isaac Dover. Welcome to Off Message. Today's guest, Wyclef Jean. Jean is, in addition to being a celebrity and musician and wanting to run for president of Haiti himself back in 2010, an activist around criminal justice and police reform issues. We caught up a few weeks ago and talked about all that, but also about celebrity activism overall for people who are opposed to Donald Trump, as most people in the entertainment business seem to be right now. It's a conversation that happened in New Orleans as part of the Collision Conference that happened before the whole episode with Kathy Griffin and that picture of her with the bloody model head of Donald Trump. But that speaks to the issue of what he was talking about. His advice for celebrities? Be more like Jimmy Kimmel. Read up, he said. If you're a high-profile person, think about how what you're doing and saying might be interpreted, or maybe misinterpreted. Otherwise, you could just end up hurting the cause you're trying to help. Be very careful, he warned, and don't make this a war with Trump supporters. What you'll also hear, his theory for why the current political climate might actually be good for criminal justice and prison reform. His interest in maybe running for office again. And yeah, you'll hear the singing. It's the first time I've ever been serenaded by a Grammy winner. Remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes or whatever platform you're listening on. Great new episodes coming with Linda McMahon, Terry McAuliffe, Chad Griffin of the Human Rights Campaign, and more. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Isaac Dover and email me, isaac@politico.com. And now, our conversation with Wyclef Jean. Well, so let's start with that. You ran for president, didn't you? Got disqualified and couldn't go through with the full campaign. I wonder what, given the way that you thought about doing that, you think of how Donald Trump went about running for president. You know, also, his first connection with people was through his celebrity, right? Mm-hmm. What that tells you about where American politics is now.
Mm-hmm. Well, starting with Haiti, my disqualification, first of all, was unlawful. I don't feel like there was enough of us in the West or in Europe that understood Haitian politics, mm-hmm. and just accepted that. The reason why I didn't proceed in that sense to the courts was because my following was basically like 21-year-old kids. And that was the dominant population. And I felt like that would have escalated to a form of violence. Mm-hmm. And like Bob Marley says, he who fights and walk away live to fight another day. leading into the coming from Haiti at 10 years old and growing up in the States, right? So you come to America for the idea or the ideal of like, the city of immigrants, you know what I mean? The country of immigrants. And I remember at the time it was President Ford, then it was Jimmy Carter, right? So we watched the Reagan era. And what happened was after the Obama administration, I could just see it. Like, so watching it, what was going on was you could just see a distrust with citizens and politicians. Like, it was sort of like if Obama was getting reelected, people was gonna, they were willing to take a chance. But it was like Obama wasn't getting reelected. And then a new star was rising. And the star that was rising, his name was Bernie Sanders. And you see, the thing about, politics in my short experience, they have something which we call like, I call it like it's a Creole word, but I'm going to say it in English. We call it like a firewire, right?
What's it in Creole?
Like firewire, kaku, jife for fire. Now, what that means is you can always feel the electricity of the population in the direction that they're moving in. And because Donald Trump was so different, it was clear that, you know, he had established a base and it only was going to keep growing because you can't underestimate a celebrity. And the idea of reality show, right? Because Hollywood, right? And the idea of going back to like World War II, a different, you understand, like we created propaganda movies, right? So we created films to basically psychologically adjust the audience at times to what we wanted them to think, right? So in understanding that you can't underestimate Donald Trump. But on the other side, there was a star that was rising, which was Bernie Sanders. And I felt that once Bernie Sanders was neutralized, you know, once that happened, I knew that it wouldn't work out for the Democrats.
You knew, you felt before the election that Donald Trump was going to win?
You know what? I felt before the election. And now let me tell you, as someone who was on The Apprentice, right? Mm-hmm. So it, first of all, it's two Donald Trumps to me, right? Because the Donald Trump that was on The Apprentice that I did the show with, or the one that hired me to play at Caesar, it just seems like a different Donald Trump, right? But they say, you know, you don't know what the ring feels like when it comes to politics until you have to put it on and have to deal with it. I just felt that once Bernie Sanders was taken out the race, that the Democrat would lose a lot.
I mean, there was Obama created a movement. Bernie Sanders created a movement. Donald Trump created a movement. Hillary Clinton did not. And her campaign knew it. And they figured that they were going to get through no matter what because of all the advantages that she had. And because people just never really conceived of the like internalized the idea that Trump could win, including Trump himself, until right after the election was called. But it still is. It's interesting. I mean, most people would say that they were completely surprised by Trump winning.
Well, I mean, once again, right, the pulse of the country was moving in two directions, and they both were extreme, right?
Yeah.
So Bernie's was very extreme, and Trump was very extreme. It was two separate sides. So it was like, this is now you would really have an interesting race in your hands, because now it becomes a race of change, right? And
well, that's right. With the people who voted for Obama and then voted for Trump, it seems like how could that happen? Except these are people who were in 2008 and in 2016 were saying, we just want something else, right?
Yes.
And Obama was something else, and Trump is certainly something else too.
And do you know the basic psychologics of a vote, right?
Yeah.
So just take the basic person, right? When they're voting, what do you think they're really voting for, right? So if it's like a mom, right? She's like, yo, I need my kid to go to school. If my kid gets sick, I need my kid to be taken care of. And I have to have a way to put something in my family's stomach, right? These are the genesis of like, so at the end of the day, I also was hearing a lot of back whispers of people saying, yo, you know, like I heard front whispers like, yo, F Donald Trump. And then behind I heard like, man, Donald Trump gonna get us a job. You see what
I'm
saying?
Which is something that he would say. He would say that he had African Americans voting for him. He would say, what do you have to lose? And and people dismiss that as something that could be at all powerful, but you were hearing it.
Yeah. I mean, once again, all of it, well, you was hearing it.
Yeah.
Like, because you got to think, when you close yourself inside of that booth and you're about to vote and you're a parent, like you're thinking about who's going to instill security within your family for the next 4 years. You know, that's automatically what you're thinking of.
So you had the experience of seeing him in The Apprentice, being there. That is a mystery to a lot of people, what happened. There are stories about how he behaved on set that that people say, people whispers that he there are things that he said, the way that he would talk to people, these tapes that have never been released. Did you see anything that made you concerned?
Not at all. I did The Apprentice, right?
Right.
But if you go online, right, you look for a picture, Wyclef Jean, Donald Trump and Sweet Mickey, right? Mm-hmm. Sweet Mickey's the ex-president of Haiti. This was the party that Trump had paid me to play back in the days. That was my experience. You know what I mean? Like I said, that's like a cool Donald Trump. You know what I'm saying to you? So once again, I just know, in having taken public office or deciding that I'm going to run, it's just two different things. You know what I mean? So I can't react on the man's behavior in the sense of, you know, I came in, I did an incredible job at The Apprentice. I thought that was great. All I could do is just comment as our country moved forward, you know, and, you know, voice my opinions on what I think is right or what I think could be better.
So how has what's happened changed the way that you think about your political involvement, your activists, your activism, the things that you want to get done and how you get them done?
Well, I mean, the first part is you can't be politically immature, right? So I feel like a lot of the things that I wanted to get done, I wasn't thinking politics first, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Trump's frustration and the reality is he goes, look, man, we got the House, we got this, we got that. I mean, even like Rush Limbaugh is flipping, right? Like, okay, well, what's the sense of us getting all of this if we can't get one thing passed, right? Ah, because now there's another reality, right? You have to have a certain amount of votes because the way the forefathers set up the Constitution, it has to always be an even balance, right? Right. And so the idea of negotiation, the art of negotiating in politics is totally different than the art of
negotiating. What does it mean for you and how you go about it?
Well, the way that I go about it and moving forward is basically to align myself with, first of all, the right counsels, you know, the right technicians. And the right technicians means if you're moving forward and you say, okay, in the field of agriculture, you know, I want to advance the country. 80% of population is living on less than a dollar a day. You know, who is the agronomist that could come in? That's the number one agronomist that could show me the different analytics, right? So for me, the model to move forward with Haiti, as far as the economy, for example, is the same analytics on how they moved forward with Rwanda mm-hmm. after the genocide, for example.
And what about in American politics? You can care about a lot of issues that are going on here.
Of course.
And how do you respond to what has happened in American politics mm-hmm. in a way that gets what you're doing forward in a different way? Do you pick issues differently, or does it change your priorities? How's that work?
Definitely. We pick issues. You know, right now we're here and we're talking about, you know, prison reform. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
prison reform is something you were talking about before the 2016 election, right?
Yeah, of course.
So like, how does the conversation about prison reform different now that you mm-hmm. see it's not just Donald Trump being president, but mm-hmm. but how American politics seems mm-hmm. to have been reordered?
But it looks like with a conservative movement, right? You always want smaller government, right? So the idea of big prisons is not the way to move forward. So for me, in that sense, it gives us a chance now of what we've been screaming about to try to get legislation to move forward on the idea of saying, okay, is there different programs? Is there different legislations, different policies? Early as I was talking about this, I said, look, at the end of the day, you go to prison, it's designed, right? The taxes paid for, you get your education, everything. Then you come out and there's nothing. Like, you basically can't get a job. So what's the idea of that? So I feel like we're doing this thing backwards. The reform should deal with when you come out. These are the programs that you mm-hmm. go to get better, not come out of rehab and go straight to the bar.
You really think that having conservative control of the government, Republicans in the majority in the House and the Senate and a Republican in the White House is better for prison reform?
No, I think that it's part of it, though. Yeah. I think that it's a bipartisan front, but I still think the idea of smaller, you know, the idea of smaller government, because the more prisons you get, the bigger it becomes, the bigger the tax issue is. So I in a bipartisan front, but I still like the conservative movement in the sense of we are looking at legislation mm-hmm. as being part of this. This is very important.
You're an immigrant. You came here as a boy. What do you make of the conversation that we're having about immigration in this country now, and how would you change that conversation so that it maybe reflects differently the experiences that you had and that people that you know had?
Yeah. I mean, I came from Haiti. I have family that have died on the Cuban waters trying to come over to Miami and have not made it, right? And some have made it, right? Some have got sent back, some over, right? And then I was like, okay, when we was coming up, right? I think it was like President Ford at the time. So my mama and daddy came first. They worked, they got their papers, Then they had two kids. Automatically, they went back to Haiti, came and got us, applied for us, and then we became citizens, right? But a lot has changed now, right, with the immigration and the whole thing. So I just think, like, immigration now is at a level where they put it at a fear factor. So it's almost like when you're looking at certain networks, it's like, okay, well, you know, don't let these people hear because they're going to kill you. And they're not talking about the other side, right? The other side is our parents, the ones that have been here forever and have not broken no laws, that have obeyed the Constitution, that has sent their kids. So I feel that, you know, as we talk about immigration reform, you know, we have, it has to be some form of exclusion. Like, you can't just be like, you know, but, you know, baby boomers, different kids getting separated from their parents. So I think that it is a bigger issue, and there have to be some form of laws that are created. Of course, you know, you can't have a border where you say, oh, anybody just come on. Of course, you're going to have laws. But at the same time, you know, you can't exclude certain people from their families.
Are you comfortable the way that President Trump has been talking about immigration reform?
No, no, not at all. Not at all, in the sense of, like, you know, start with the refugee ban, right? Yeah. It's preposterous, in the sense, for me, as someone who considers my group being Fuji, right, short for refugees, I find it crazy. This is why in the start of the conversation, I said we have to be very careful, because immigration reform now is, it's more being used as a fear factor. It's almost like, oh, we're not going to let these people in. The other day, the snake poem.
Mm-hmm. It's, he's like, read many times, right?
But right?
It's the first time we read as president, right?
Yeah, the snake poem, for example, you know what I mean? And, you know, when you look at that, like, certain things like that, it just makes me discomfort, you know what I mean?
So, but you knew, how is it that you reconcile the Trump that you knew before with the Trump who...
You don't. You just understand, right? What I understand is, did you see Trump sitting on one side and Obama sitting on one side? And did you see them shaking hands?
Yeah, I was in the room for that, actually.
Okay, right? You was in the room, right?
It was a very weird day, that Thursday after the election. Neither of them wanted to be there.
Exactly. But they still had to shake hands, right? Because they said, okay, well, we're no longer citizens now. We're politicians. Mm-hmm. Obama said, okay, cool. Well, I'm on my way out. I'm going to be back a citizen. Hillary now goes, well, I'm a citizen. I'm part of the resistance. You know what I mean?
Do you think that overall, I mean, Trump came essentially as a celebrity to be electing president. It seems like there is a rise of all sorts of people getting involved in not only the resistance, but in any of the political movements going on. Does that mean that you think it's more important to have celebrities, musicians, artists, actors, whoever they might be, being in prominent political roles?
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword, right? The celebrities that are speaking should know what they're talking about, because if you're the celebrity that's speaking based on emotion, you don't know what policy you're talking about, they're going to take that soundbite and make a whole movie out of it. So I encourage every celebrity, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's be as smart as Kimball, you know, like, really, you know, like, let's use our celebrity in a sense to really, like, say, OK, we're not going to base this on an emotional level. We're not going to base it on the right or the left or the center, but as human beings.
But is it true? I mean, Jimmy Kimmel was emotional, right?
Yes.
And that's what was driving that. I don't think that it was necessarily that he started out thinking he wanted to say something about Obamacare, but it's from the situation that he had with his son, right?
Yeah, but once again, he's very smart, right? And like you and me, he understands the power of comedy, right? And understand, right? Because through humor, we can get a lot across. But at the same time, you are talking about your child, right? But at the same time, that definitely helped move the needle forward. I think that we still have to be very careful, right? Because there's a thing with this administration in Hollywood where it's like, right, you know, it's like the yin and the yang. It's like a little war thing going on, right? But at the same time,
he's got one going with the press.
Huh?
He's got one going with the press too, the same yin
yes
yang
yes
thing.
Yes. So but at the same time, I think that, right, But think about, man, our forefathers, right? How this country was founded. So the idea of you having a voice and constantly being able to express yourself and saying, I don't agree with this or I agree with this, it's important. I feel that we're at a time now where your voice should be louder than it's ever been.
Do you worry about fragmenting your audience, you know, people who may not like what you're saying about Donald Trump and turn off from your music?
Well, once again, everybody that's seen me on The Apprentice, right? Once again, I have Donald Trump fans, I have Obama fans, I have Clinton fans. Y'all heard me. If I was president, yeah. I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday. So once again, if I'm sitting in class and I'm an Obama fan and you a Trump fan, or I'm a Bernie Sanders fan and you a Trump fan, that don't mean that we can't have the conversation, right? So the right and the left can have this conversation. Why can we have this? We can't have this conversation because in my family, as I'm talking to you right now, right, my sister, she was a Trump supporter, right? I'm just telling you. So at the end
and
of the day,
how did that conversation there, go between the two? Yeah,
there's constant debates, right? It's but it's healthy. So at the end of the day, but we're not on the street burning tires. We're not looting. So we have to be careful too. At the same time, to not make it look like there's a war going on with Trump supporters and other. There's not. At the end of the day, because there's a small thing going on, right? The bigger picture of it is everyone should be allowed to voice their opinion, right? So Rush Limbaugh ain't going to lose his fan base, right?
No.
So Wyclef Jean fans that support Trump should not be, oh, man, we ain't going to support, but we ain't going to get Wyclef. Because at the end of the day, they understand that I have an opinion, right? So, and in my opinion, is as important as their opinion. But dude, I mean, this is America, right? So we all have to be able to state it in a non-violent way.
I wonder, you and maybe this comes back to what you're talking about at the Firewire. There's a quote that I saw. It was a Rolling Stone article, I think, from around 2010, where you talked about Sarah Palin and how you thought she was raw and fresh. And
once again, I was misquoted.
This is what you're talking about, right?
So with the Sarah Palin thing, like a lot of people was going at Sarah Palin, like, yo, she's crazy, she's this or that, right? I said, this is America, and the same way I voice my opinion, Sarah Palin should be able to voice, because the day she can't voice her opinion is the day I can't voice my opinion. Mm-hmm. So once again, oh my God, once I said that, it was like, yo, Clef said he's supporting Sarah Palin. But
you were not a Sarah Palin supporter.
Once again, it wasn't a Sarah Palin supporter. It was saying that, you know, freedom of speech. If I have that freedom of speech, you have that freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But at the same time, there are barriers. If you're a racist, then we can't really have a conversation because you already cut the barrier and there's no conversation.
You talked about the emotional level versus the policy level. One of the things that I've heard you talk about is the distrust that is coming up among citizens towards the police, right? And the possibility that this leads to a very dark place. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a very, you know, this is a mix of policy and emotion with me. How does that, what are you worried about happening there? Are you worried that, I heard you say that it could be like headed toward violent revolution if we don't?
Yeah. Well, I'm worried about more riots. And the escalation of riots, if you have looked at it in the past year, are escalating. And it's almost like we're back to like the 70s, you know, like closer to like the Nam era, like where it's almost like, and the riots keep getting more and more violent now. And so what happens is you're going to have but so much places that you're going to say, we're going to recruit the National Guard into. So before it gets to that level, right? We have to find a common ground with citizen and police. And in order to do that, both sides have to feel protected, right? So to me, it almost seems like shooting a black man now, it's just, oh, police shot a black man. Oh, police done shot another. It almost seems like the norm.
Routine almost.
It almost seems like routine because nothing basically happens. So I'm just like, okay, well, at the end of the day, if this thing keeps escalating like that, then what happens is you've seen it in the history books. It happened over and over in the history books. When the people are fed up, you've seen it. And so my thing is, we're in a position right now where we should be like, look, how do we really work on police and citizen reform? How do we really get, and then I'm speaking as someone who has police officers in my family. Mm-hmm. So once again, I know great police. And even great police know when certain police do something that it's just not right. Dude, you can't be doing that. And I'm just saying, we have to figure this out.
You started off by saying that we need to give Donald Trump a chance. Are you still in that spot that we should be given a chance? Given the problems that you have, that you talk about, some of the issues you talk about, are you already in a different place on him?
No, I mean, Dave Chappelle said it. You know, and Dave Chappelle said it on SNL
at the end of the
day. Yeah, like at the end of the day, I just feel that he has a 4-year term, mm-hmm. right? And remember what Obama said: don't boo, vote.
Yeah.
And if you don't agree with something he's doing, protest. No one is saying like don't protest peacefully, but at the same time, I feel that when you take the role of government, there's so much in your hand, and until you sit on that seat, you're not going to understand it. You know, am I a Donald Trump fan? The Apprentice? Yes. Am I a Donald Trump fan as the president? No. But should we give a guy a chance? Yes. It's a hard job.
Does it change the way that you think about what your future candidacy might look like? Will you run for office again, either in Haiti or in the United States?
No, I've the run aspect of me wanting to run for president, the urgency. I felt like I didn't have a leader at my country mm-hmm. at the time, 250,000 under the rubble. I will always step up to public service, mm-hmm. and you don't have to be president to do that. And I will serve my country here in the United States. I will serve Haiti and in public office in the future.
You think you'd run for office in Haiti or the United States?
I think, you know, in the future, I would serve in some form of public office. Definitely. I love helping people.
All right. Wyclef John, cool. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.